All right, so let's jump right into this deep dive.
Yeah, let's do it.
Today we're tackling Chapter 1 of the UK Wargaming Handbook.
Okay.
Our listeners wanted a quick breakdown of the highlights.
5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes. And to help unpack this,
I got a stack of UK military documents.
Yeah, we do. And trust me, it gets pretty interesting.
It is fascinating.
Like right away, the handbook jumps into the practical side of wargaming.
Absolutely. It emphasizes how to use wargaming to make better military decisions.
So right away, it's like this is a tool you can actually use.
Yeah.
But how is wargaming defined?
Right.
Is it just another term for planning?
That's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The handbook is very clear that wargaming is separate from things like planning exercises.
Oh.
Right. Wargaming is about execution, putting plans into action in a simulated environment, of course,
right. Yeah.
And then facing the consequences.
So it's like a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
But with much lower stakes.
Exactly. Yeah. And they give a really cool historical example in the handbook.
Yeah. A war game from 1904 about the Battle of Port Arthur.
Wait, they were wargaming back then?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wargaming has been around for a long time.
Mm.
They actually used that Port Arthur war game to try and predict how the real battle would go.
Mm.
Well, the predictions ended up incredibly accurate.
Wow.
Yeah. But here's the frustrating part. The admiral in charge at the time completely dismissed the war game's findings. He didn't buy into the process.
Oh, man.
And he missed a chance to learn from it.
That is a shame. I guess it shows how important it is to actually listen to the results of these war games, right?
Absolutely.
That buy-in idea, it seems like a big deal.
It is. And the handbook stresses it a lot.
Okay.
But moving on, the handbook also breaks down all the different types of war games.
Okay.
Each one has its own strengths and weaknesses.
So there's no one right way to do it.
Oop.
Interesting.
They talk about manual war games versus computer-aided war games, two-sided versus one-sided, and even red teaming.
Red teaming.
I'm not familiar with that.
So say you have your plan, your strategy.
Okay.
A red team comes in and basically plays the role of your adversary.
Ah, I see.
They try to find weaknesses in your plan. Anything you might have missed.
To challenge your assumptions.
Exactly.
Make you think critically.
Yep. And guess what?
What?
We even have a red teaming guide in our stack of sources here.
Oh, wow.
We can dig into that more later.
Red teaming sounds intense.
It can be, yeah.
But valuable.
Incredibly.
So the handbook dives into real-world examples of war games.
It does.
Including one about the Falklands War.
A fascinating case study.
Wait. They simulated a whole war.
Yeah.
How is that even possible?
So this one was a manual, two-sided war game. Students took on the roles of both sides of the conflict.
Got it.
And get this, they even factored in international and domestic reactions to the events of the war.
So they weren't just focused on the military side of things.
Nope. They tried to capture the complexities of a real conflict. They had ways to simulate combat, generate intelligence reports, and even model how other actors would perceive the situation.
Wow, it's like stepping back in time.
It is.
And experiencing the war from all these different perspectives.
Exactly.
You know what's really cool is they're using these historical events to learn from.
Yeah.
And to prepare for the future.
For sure.
Not just replicating the past, but extracting valuable insights that can be applied to current and future challenges. Right?
Exactly.
Okay, so is there another historical example?
There is. A war game from 1914 called the Kriegsspiel.
Kriegsspiel.
Yeah. It was designed to simulate World War I.
Whoa.
Imagine gaming out an entire world war.
That's some next-level strategic thinking.
Yeah, it is. And the handbook mentions a simplified version of that game, which can be played in just 90 minutes.
90 minutes to play through a world war.
Yep.
That's amazing.
It is.
But it kind of makes sense, too.
It does.
You can strip away some of the complexity.
All right.
But you still get those core strategic principles.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So wargaming really is adaptable.
It is.
You can tailor it to fit any time frame or whatever your resources are.
You can.
And your objectives.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
It is. Yeah, it really is remarkable. The UK military seems to think so, too.
It definitely sounds like more than just a fun activity for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they have whole handbooks dedicated to it, right?
Exactly. It's not about playing games.
Right.
It's about serious tools for thinking strategically.
Okay.
And here's the interesting part. The handbook is clear that wargaming shouldn't be seen as a crystal ball.
Oh, so they're not saying they can predict the future.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not about saying this will happen.
Yeah.
It's more about asking, what if this happens?
Yeah.
Or what if that happens? Exploring those possibilities.
To be prepared.
Exactly.
So it's not about planning for the most likely thing to happen.
Right.
But thinking about all the unlikely things.
Yes.
And how we'd handle them.
That's a great way to put it.
And I guess by playing out those scenarios, yeah, they can find those risks.
And opportunities.
They might have missed.
Exactly.
It's like they're stress testing their strategies before actually using them.
That's a great way to think about it.
A mental gym?
The handbook actually uses the term experimentation.
Oh.
They want people to experiment with different approaches, you know, in a safe environment.
Where the consequences are minimal.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest advantages, I guess.
Absolutely. And they highlight another crucial point.
Okay.
Buy-in from everyone involved.
Oh, right.
Like that admiral we talked about.
Yeah, the one who dismissed the Port Arthur war game.
Right.
What's the point if nobody is taking it seriously?
Exactly. They emphasize that for war gaming to be effective,
yeah,
everyone needs to be on board.
Like start to finish.
Yeah. The designers, the players, even the decision makers who will use the insights.
So it's not just about the game itself.
Right.
But about creating a culture.
Of learning.
Adaptation within the military.
Precisely. And all of this discussion about preparing for challenges.
Yeah.
It goes back to what we were talking about earlier.
The practical side of the handbook.
Yes. It's not just some theoretical document. They actually give concrete steps on how to use wargaming.
Technical issues.
Exactly. And they even get into the nitty-gritty, the methodologies, data collection, different analysis techniques.
But they're giving people the skills they need.
The knowledge.
To use wargaming effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm starting to see why you like this handbook so much.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
It's a window into how the UK military approaches strategy.
And prepares for the future.
Exactly. What I think is cool is the emphasis on learning and adaptation.
Yeah.
They're acknowledging that the world is constantly changing.
Yeah.
It's like they're embracing uncertainty.
Instead of fearing it.
Exactly.
Right.
Let's anticipate what's coming and be ready for anything.
That's the idea.
So if someone wanted to learn more about wargaming, what would you suggest?
Well, this handbook, it's a good place to start. It's got tons of practical advice, examples, and stuff.
And I seem to really be encouraging people to give it a try.
Absolutely. You don't have to be some military expert to benefit from wargaming.
Right.
The ideas apply to all kinds of situations.
Okay, so even if you aren't planning a military campaign.
Yeah.
You could use wargaming.
For business decisions.
To think through a tough problem.
Exactly.
You'd think about all the different scenarios, the risks, how each option might play out.
Like a dress rehearsal for real life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And by practicing that kind of thinking, you'd become more confident.
More adaptable when things are uncertain.
Yeah, I can see that.
This has been really great.
It has. I've learned a lot about how the UK military approaches strategy.
Right.
And some ideas I can use in my own life.
That's awesome.
I'm glad.
Wargaming isn't just about winning or losing.
No.
It's about learning, becoming a more strategic thinker.
It's really inspiring, their approach to wargaming.
It is. It's like they're saying, hey, we don't have all the answers, but
We're going to use every tool we've got.
To make the best decisions.
Exactly.
That focus on continuous learning, though.
Yeah.
It's a good lesson for everyone.
Absolutely. This has been a great deep dive. I've had a lot to think about.
Good.
Any last thoughts for our listeners out there?
I think the big takeaway from this chapter is that wargaming isn't about predicting the future.
Right.
With, like, perfect accuracy.
Right.
It's more about
embracing the uncertainty.
Exactly.
Challenging your assumptions.
Yep.
Developing adaptable strategies.
Being prepared for what ifs.
Right.
Navigating a complex world.
It's a powerful message.
It is.
Well, to our listeners.
Yeah.
We hope this sparked your curiosity about wargaming.
And its potential.
Whether you're into military strategy or business.
Or just want to sharpen your thinking skills.
Explore this stuff.
It's fascinating.
It is.
The most important thing is to keep learning.
Keep experimenting.
Challenge yourself.
Think differently.
Until next time. Happy wargaming.
Happy wargaming.